Hey everybody, before we start today's interview between Jim and Dr. Peter McCullough, just wanted to give you a heads up that we'll be discussing a large number of thorny and controversial issues when it comes to COVID, vaccine safety, efficacy of wearing masks, and much more. During this discussion, Dr. McCullough cites a large list of research and data to support many of his claims, which we will also have posted along with this interview on Financial Sense. If you need any help finding these on our website, simply send us a message through our Contact Us page, and we'll be happy to email them to you. Thank you, and we hope you enjoy today's interview with Dr. Peter McCullough, who developed one of the most widely utilized treatment guidelines for COVID published in the American Journal of Medicine.
The Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, here we are. We're heading into flu season. The Delta variant has been spiking. What does this all mean for COVID? What is the best practice to protect yourself and avoid it? And what should we be doing? Well, let's find out. Joining me on the program is Dr. Peter McCullough. Doctor, I wonder if you might tell our listeners a little bit about your background, because you're one of the few people that I've met that have as many designations after your name as I do.
I'm an academic internist and cardiologist in Dallas, Texas. I maintain my board certifications in both specialties. I see patients every week. And I have really been involved in the COVID-19 pandemic response with the idea that I wasn't going to let the virus take my patients away. I wasn't going to let the virus slaughter my patients. So I've always offered my patients early treatment to reduce the risks of hospitalization and death using the best available evidence and the best available drugs that I had. And now I've been very focused on vaccine safety with respect to the currently available COVID-19 vaccines. And right now, as patients are falling sick with the Delta variant, whether they've been vaccinated or not, I give them early treatment and get them through the illness to avoid the hospital and certainly avoid dying.
Well, doctor, we had a tremendous response to our first interview. I guess since that time, which was several months ago, what, if anything, has changed since the last time we spoke, either the virus or the protocols to treat it?
Things have really advanced greatly. We have now the featured monoclonal antibody from Regeneron. It's a combination of two antibodies directed against the spike protein. And a paper published in the Infectious Disease Society of America journal shows the earlier it's administered, day by day by day, if we can get it earlier, we can markedly reduce the risks of mortality with the monoclonal antibody. Remember, former President Trump received that very early on. They didn't waste time. And so I want your listeners to understand the next high-risk senior, let's say somebody over 65 with two or more medical problems, they get COVID-19. Whether or not they've received the vaccine, they should immediately seek one of these monoclonal antibodies. So how should they do that? They should call their doctor ahead of time. Call the office and say, where do patients get referred for these monoclonal antibody infusions? How do I get one if I get ill with COVID-19? We have about 1 million doctors in the United States. We've got 500,000 mid-level providers. And you know what? Right now, it's about 500 doctors taking care of the whole country because we got 1 million doctors sitting on the sideline and patients have to kick them into gear.
Mm. You know, doctor, why is it that we're seeing big government, big media, big tech against using therapeutics such as ivermectin and hydroxy, which we know work? I think this figure is correct, that over 4 billion people have taken ivermectin, hydroxy, probably that or more. You know, they act like these are experimental drugs. I mean, hydroxy has been out, 40, 50 years, ivermectin since 1975. Why are they against therapeutics?
Well, certainly the rest of the world's not against therapeutics. The Indian Medical Council in India, frontline hydroxychloroquine back in March of 2020, we know it was first line in Greece and across Eastern Europe. We know that ivermectin in Bangladesh, India, widely utilized South America. When Mexico City, when things got out of hand, they crushed their curve with an ivermectin-based multi-drug approach. India, with the Delta variant, which sprang up out of pockets that were vaccinated with the CoronaVac vaccine and it allowed the Delta variant to become dominant, they crushed their curves with ivermectin and multi-drug treatment. On top of that, Russia, Japan, other countries have favipiravir, an oral polymerase, like an oral remdesivir. It doesn't work as well, I think, as hydroxy or ivermectin, but we certainly have those. But there's been way too much focus on these antivirals. Don't forget, when the virus gets in the body, it gets inside cells right away, and the drugs don't, you know, aren't that terribly effective. What really makes a giant difference is the use of steroids and colchicine and blood thinners. And everybody really, you know, doesn't give those enough attention. That's what saves people's lives. In the end, when people die of COVID-19, they die of blood clots in the lungs.
The thing that really struck me about this whole thing, doctor, is given the high survival rates of COVID, I forget what's the percentage, 99 something. Most of those that have died have been comorbidities, older folks, people in retirement homes. Has it surprised you in the way we handle this virus versus, let's say, SARS 1 and 2 or other outbreaks?
If you look at, let's say, pneumococcal pneumonia, which is the most common cause of pneumonia in seniors, community-acquired pneumonia, we use a selective use of the Pneumovax vaccine. If we had a senior in a nursing home that developed a fever and difficulty breathing, we would give a dose of antibiotics. We'd use ceftriaxone or other antibiotics. We would treat it early. In no way, shape, or form would we ever let a nursing home patient get sick with a virus or a bacteria, let them get sick for days, if not weeks, offer them no treatment, in fact, prohibit treatment, and then allow them to suffer hospitalization, be put into isolation, and sadly die in the hospital. So you're right. The way we're handling COVID-19 is a complete abrogation of conventional good medical practice.
Yeah, because, you know, the thing that we always want is we want to get herd immunity. What really struck me, how do you get herd immunity if you quarantine the healthiest members of your population, like young people, in the way we did?
Well, you're right. I think there was great fear that we were going to try to slow the spread, that it was going to happen, but slow it down and not overwhelm our hospitals. But as we look back, we clearly didn't need to close schools. We had lots of examples. Here in Dallas, Texas, we had the parochial schools. They never closed down. They had classes, in-person classes all the way through the year. The Dallas Independent School District closed down. Guess what? No difference in terms of outbreaks. There were no school outbreaks. There was no student-to-teacher transmission. All of that was completely unnecessary. And so, you know, we have large numbers in the Dallas Independent School District. The kids aren't ready to graduate or didn't graduate. And yet the parochial schools just blazed right through. The same thing in colleges. You know, the colleges, a lot of colleges did not have in-person classes. And so, you know what the kids did? They already rented their apartments. They actually stayed on, you know, around the colleges. They were on WebEx during the day, and then they go out to the bars and play basketball and softball and have fun around. I've known tons of college kids like that. So not having the kids in the college classroom was a completely useless intervention because the kids had plenty of close contact and social contact. Younger people become an immunologic buffer because COVID-19 is a very mild illness. It's like a mild cold. In fact, it's milder than most colds. And so they develop a robust immunity. You know, small children have a thymus gland. They even have more immune mechanisms to provide immunity than the adults do. So shutting down schools, that was counterproductive. Closing colleges never should have happened. There never were any outbreaks to be of concern with. We've had a big focus on healthcare workers of interest. Dentists have been in the mouths of people all year long. There have been no dental clinic outbreaks, and they have very close contact. And one of the reasons is they use anti-infective dental techniques that are supported by the American Dental Association, and they don't get any mention by our public health officials or the media.
You and I were talking about the vaccine just before we went on the air. And why are there no control groups or somebody coming out, either the FDA or CDC, and saying, look, of the three vaccines we have out there, Pfizer or Moderna or Johnson & Johnson, we have found has the most efficacy in preventing COVID. Why do we not have this information available to us?
The sponsors of the current vaccine program, which is an investigation, so it's research. Research always has sponsors. It's actually the FDA and the CDC. So their responsibility to you and I, and in fact, those agencies work for us, their responsibility is to us, at least on a weekly, if not a monthly basis, is to give us a report. Your listeners are all financial people. They look at data all day long. So the responsibility of these agencies is to give a public a report regarding safety and efficacy. If safety events are happening, if people are dying after the vaccine, they better tell us why. And they better tell us how to avoid future deaths if people are getting other injury syndromes, like to the heart or to the neurologic system or the hematologic system, immune system. Again, they should tell us who and why and how these risks can be mitigated. So that's a minimum weekly or monthly report. And now we're far enough along where they should absolutely tell us at this point in time who's the winner and who's the loser, and then who's in between. Because Americans make choices, and we knew these products weren't the same. So let me give you an example. Of the two messenger RNA vaccines, do you know Moderna is 100 micrograms of messenger RNA per shot, whereas Pfizer's only 30 micrograms of messenger RNA per shot? And Johnson & Johnson is a separate adenoviral vector shot. And it's just Johnson & Johnson is just one shot, and one gets a certain number of viral particles. So these are very different, and there is absolutely no way that they're equal at this point in time. There's no way. And so it's up to our agencies to tell Americans these vaccines have been sitting on the shelf for weeks or months. Americans haven't taken a vaccine in a very long time now. There's a tremendous full stop on people getting vaccinated. And they need to tell Americans, what's the next step here?
Do you think maybe some of the reluctance on vaccines is when you are looking to healthcare officials and they flip-flop and they keep changing, or you see politicians issuing mandates but not following them themselves personally, that it kind of raises questions in people's minds?
I think it's the stonewalling of information on safety that's the biggest issue. And I mean a stonewalling. I mean, there is no mention of this. So there was an internet survey that was out. It was actually out on Twitter. And it asked the question, does anybody know of somebody in their circles who's died after the vaccine? And the answer is 12% of people said, yeah, they did. So people are talking right now. And if that word gets out, and the word is out there that people are dying after the vaccine, believe me, there's not a single person who wants to walk into a vaccine center and lose their life. And so I think death after vaccine is the single greatest reason for vaccine hesitancy. It's not a joke. And we know that by the CDC open vaccine event reporting system data update that occurs every week in the United States, people just look at this and they rely on it. They know at this point in time that we are at over 13,000 deaths after the vaccine. That's a giant number. A number for a program this size would maybe 150, that would kind of be reported at different times. This is 13,000 analysis by McLachlan and from London, Rose from Israel. They've used the data. We know that 50% of the deaths occur within 48 hours. 80% of deaths occur in a week. So they're very tightly related to getting the injection. We know that 86% of the time, there's no other explanation. People were walking into these vaccine centers and they were dying. And so, until we get a very detailed analysis on these deaths and how can they be prevented, who did they occur in, under what circumstances, I think America's at a full stop in taking the vaccine. Nobody wants to lose their life with the vaccine. You can't blame them.
We know that viruses mutate over time. Every single year with flu season, you get a different flu shot. How would you characterize the Delta variant, stronger, weaker, as these viruses mutate?
I've been on national TV a bunch of times during the Delta outbreak, and I have to tell you, honestly, I really underestimated it. I thought it was going to be a smaller, shorter duration outbreak, but it's hard to read. I'm now deep into managing a lot of cases. I am communicating with lots of people over the country. My frank assessment is Delta is formidable. That we can treat it early. If we catch it early, I need to catch it within a few days. We need to use multiple drugs. We cannot go light on the drugs. And then once hospitalized, watch out. It becomes very difficult to treat people going on the ventilator and people dying in the hospital. So I have great respect for Delta. And it looks like it's clearly avoiding the effects of the vaccine. So that point is very clear. Certainly Pfizer, we know in Israel, they really have a crisis of the vaccinated. 15,634 cases, ages 20 and up. Of those cases, 86% fully vaccinated. 86%. So it's clear at this point in time, Pfizer, which is exclusively used in Israel. In fact, they've already had vaccine failures for people who have taken the booster. It's clear that Pfizer is not covering the Delta variant.
Now they're talking about, doctor, having kids wear masks continuously, and they're talking about vaccinating kids. What's the risk of doing that?
There have been 12 randomized trials of masks in respiratory illnesses, and including the Dan mask trial done specifically in COVID-19. Putting masks on kids or public masking doesn't work. Now, I think masks in dentists, doctors, hairdressers, people working at close range, multiple encounters, I think it's fine. Masks can cut down on a big sneeze, but we can't rely on masks to reduce the spread of COVID-19. I think it simply doesn't work, and we should drop it. What we should have in place of all the focus on masks on kids is we should have sick kid policies. And we should have a policy that parents never let a sick kid go to school. That's very important. Prior to COVID, we used to do that. Kids have a little cold, we let them go to school. Don't do that anymore. We should have policies that if a kid does get sick at school, that they go home promptly. I think the schools ought to be outfitted with forehead thermometers, and teachers ought to be able to check a sick kid if they start to spike a fever, get them out of school and get them home. I think that's the type of public health interventions that we need right now to help. Kids are going to get Delta. Probably every kid's going to get it. It's going to run through the pediatric population. The kids will get broad immunity. I mean, a lot of kids already have immunity. So that's what we need there instead of masking. In terms of vaccines, what we know is that the children don't develop severe disease, thankfully. The only kids who get hospitalized are those who are denied early treatment. And denying early treatment is a huge mistake. If a child presents with severe symptoms, it's easily treatable with some easy pediatric medicines. We're talking about pediatric inhalers and steroid nebulizers, use of prednisone, limited dose of doxycycline or azithromycin, and aspirin. And we can get the kids through the illness. So it's only those who are really denied and deprived early treatment end up in the hospital. And we know from an analysis from Macri and colleagues from Johns Hopkins that with over 300 kids last year who died, now it's sad, 300 kids died with COVID-19, all but one had serious other illnesses like cystic fibrosis or childhood cancer, et cetera. You know, healthy kids don't die of COVID-19. And in the May 27th publication by Frank and colleagues, a randomized trial of Pfizer vaccine versus placebo, 2,200 kids randomized, the Pfizer vaccine had no clinically significant impact on kids. There was only 18 cases of the sniffles that was prevented with Pfizer. No serious illness impact, no impact on spread to others. And about 60 to 80% of the kids got really sick. I mean, they got fever. They had to take time out of school. So the vaccine was clearly worse than the illness itself. So children, and the FDA is trying to tell us this with specific warnings on Pfizer and Moderna in young people for myocarditis or heart inflammation. We have over 4,000 cases now in the United States. In fact, we've had childhood deaths due to the vaccine. The FDA is trying to tell us at this point in time. They're trying to warn us against vaccination in children. Separately with Johnson & Johnson, we have warnings in women for serious blood clots in the brain and elsewhere, as well as paralysis, men and women, called Guillain-Barré syndrome. So, you know, these vaccines do not have a safety profile that's really applicable to young people who can get through the COVID-19 illness without any difficulty. We can always treat young people if they have severe symptoms, though the vast majority don't need treatment. And in many ways, the vaccines have made things worse because they've created a source of tension of being, being really kind of blocking children from being involved in activities, making it difficult for them to attend school. If children don't take the vaccines, having really illegal activities like asymptomatic testing. Asymptomatic testing is not approved by any regulatory agency in the United States. That would be testing that's completely off the regulatory indications in use. And then public masking, as we talked about, the science doesn't support it.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you think of most people, and I've seen this all the time, they get one mask, it's a cloth or it could be a gaiter. They wear it every single day. It's doubtful that they're washing it. I mean, they put it on, then they're touching the mask to pull it down to eat or drink or something like that. That's one thing. But the thing that really strikes me about, as you just mentioned this about the vaccines, why are we getting so militant? We've got universities that are saying, if you don't get the vaccine, you can't come to school. We have employers that are saying, if you don't get the vaccine, you can't come to work. I mean, we're almost getting, and then these vaccine passports, where if you're in Los Angeles or New York, if you don't have proof of the vaccine, you can't go out publicly. You can't walk into a restaurant or gym.
Yeah, it's clearly not me that's supporting it. I have always been a supporter of vaccines if they're safe in a very limited group. So if the COVID-19 vaccines would have been safe, you know, out of the gate, I would have said high risk seniors and nursing home workers. That's about it. Since we never had any outbreaks among hospitals, we certainly wouldn't vaccinate healthcare workers. We didn't have school outbreaks. Any place where we didn't have outbreaks, we wouldn't use them. So it would just be, we had clearly had nursing home outbreaks. We had nursing home workers get nursing home patients sick and they died. So that clearly, we probably should have had 5, 10, maybe 15 million people vaccinated. That's it. What we have now is we have an unbridled program. We have about half the nation took the vaccine before they really understood what was going on. We've had over 13,000 deaths. We've had 545,000 injuries that the CDC has certified, hundreds of thousands of hospitalizations. I mean, Americans have been damaged greatly by these vaccines, greatly. There's a lawsuit filed based on CMS data extrapolating to the country. 45,000 Americans probably have lost their life with the vaccine. That is extraordinary for people to volunteer to get an injection and they don't know if they're going to live. I mean, the tension is you can cut it with a knife. And so to actually now start to force this really, really uncomfortable decision. The desperation among Americans where they're pitted between trying to keep their job or losing their life. And it's absolutely atrocious. We ought to immediately drop these vaccines, immediately drop them, take all the tension out of the air, let the country go back to normal, treat patients who are high risk for COVID-19 and move on. That's my recipe for America. Not where we are now. I mean, as we sit here today, probably about half of Americans will lose their job in the next 60 days. You can imagine, this is a financial show. You can imagine when that's going to do the stock market.
You know, when I take a look at this, so we've got these anti-monoclonal bodies, if you can get that right away. And it sounds like even with therapeutics with this virus, you need to get that right away. I want to talk about something else that you've mentioned in the past. Can you explain a nebulizer, how it's used, and why this may be important?
You know, after the monoclonal antibodies, we get into drugs, oral drugs that can reduce viral replication. And just briefly, we use oral hydroxychloroquine supported by 250 studies, ivermectin supported by 60 studies with doxycycline or azithromycin, which are assistive. Beyond that, what you mentioned is we use inhaled steroids, and particularly a particularly strong one called budesonide or Pulmicort. And there are two randomized trials in adult outpatients that when we use Pulmicort as a treatment, part of a multi-drug treatment, we reduce the risks of hospitalization with COVID-19 by over 80%. So no American who gets COVID-19, who's an adult over age 50, should ever be denied a Pulmicort inhaler. In fact, Americans should call their doctors and demand it.
You know, doctor, something that really disturbed me over all of this is the sort of cloud that is on not only just the vaccines, but the censorship of information. In other words, science is about debate. It's about discussion. But you've got big media and big tech companies censoring this. Are there any news, data sources, or websites that you could recommend that our listeners could go and find out for themselves to do research? Because, I mean, it's getting harder and harder as the big tech and the big media companies try to censor people putting out information that could save lives.
You're right. It's really needed. And Americans should know that this is intentional. So early in December, the British Broadcasting Company, along with all major media outlets and social media, announced the Trusted News Initiative. Everybody should type this into their browser, Trusted News Initiative. The Trusted News Initiative is an overt censorship program. And it said that it was going to do everything it could to, in an unbridled fashion, promote vaccine uptake and vaccine use. And it was going to do everything to squash vaccine hesitancy. And I mean everything. That means squashing any hope of early treatment, any hope of promising therapies on the horizon and squash any information on vaccine safety. And the Trusted News Initiative has been airtight on this. YouTube, the medical director, came out and openly said this. Twitter, Facebook, other sources of media. And so they follow this. They follow us. If you turn on the major media at night, there is no mention of a single treatment, not a single mention of an update, no mention on any vaccine safety issues, and a wide open promotion of the vaccine. And I think Americans are tired of it. They know that this is going on. They know about the Trusted News Initiative, and they want to know. They want to know what's the best vaccine. So they're looking for information. They want to know about if they get COVID-19, particularly since the vaccines are failing, and they don't work anyway, what treatments do they go for? So here are the websites they can go to. They can go to the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, AAPSonline.org. That has the original home treatment guide. That importantly has the list of treating doctors if the local doctor is not competent in treating COVID-19. It's very important. Now, the next site to go to is Truth for Health Foundation. Truth for Health Foundation. That's a rich source of updates, videos, all focused on getting truthful information out regarding treatment. They also have an updated treatment guide and lots of information on vaccine safety. For more seriously ill patients in the hospital, we have patients' families every day asking questions. I have somebody in the ICU. It looks like they're not getting optimal treatment. What do I do? I recommend that they go to the Frontline Critical Care Consortium, flcc.net, flcc.net, for critical care issues. And then lastly, for vaccine mandates, vaccine passports, civil rights violations, people losing their jobs, all these horrific things, go to AmericanFrontlineDoctors.com or .org, AFLDS. And another really useful site for, particularly for religious exemptions, as people are literally being forced to take a vaccine that they know is harmful to them, that violates virtually every principle of every religion known to man. Go to Liberty Council. Liberty Council has lots of resources there. People are going to go all the way on this. Unfortunately, if these vaccine mandates go through, and if people do this in order to try to preserve their job, what's going to happen in the next few months is we're going to have many more vaccine injuries, and we're going to have really an untold number of deaths. People will lose their lives in a very, very tragic way. So many have a great interest in are out there saying, listen, you know, we've got to shut down the program. And the evidence-based consulting group in the UK has officially advised this. They reviewed the yellow card system, and they recommended about a month or two ago to the MHRA in England, that's the FDA. So listen, we've looked at it. The vaccines are not safe for human use. They have AstraZeneca, Pfizer, and Moderna, and they recommended shutting it down. There was a French group early in March. They were the first ones to recommend shutting it down. And then a broadly authored paper and came out in May by Bruno and colleagues, 57 authors, 17 countries. They basically, they didn't say shut down the program, but they told each government, listen, get safety reviewed, get some safety mechanisms in place, get external doctors to start reviewing why the programs are going wrong, why people are dying, and get some recommendations to get safety built into the program. Otherwise, shut them down.
You know, doctor, one of the things that I was fortunate enough is I put together a COVID medical kit. So when I got it, I could immediately, day one, start out with therapeutics. I had ivermectin, hydroxy, I had Z-Pak and flumoxacin later. And I also had the nutraceuticals, you know, whether it's vitamin D, zinc, and those things. Would you recommend, if possible, if you can, either contacting or putting together a COVID medical kit? So if somebody does get it, you don't have to scramble as one of my friends did and try to find somebody that could get them a therapeutic. Or as my wife's friend ended up in the hospital with basically a heart issue.
You certainly can. I published two sets of guidances, one in August of 2020, the American Journal of Medicine, and then the follow-up in Reviews in Cardiovascular Medicine, December of 2020. These are in the peer-reviewed literature. They're cited by the National Library of Medicine. In each one of those journals, they're the most frequently downloaded and utilized protocols worldwide. And I just got a report from the American Journal of Medicine. And a year later, it's still the most frequently utilized paper. So I know I hit it just right in really helping the world get through COVID-19. And in the second paper in Reviews in Cardiovascular Medicine, I have a table. And out of 168 countries, we found 30 that have treatment kits. So just south of us, I'm in Texas, just south of us in Central America, they're passing out treatment kits across Central America that involve multiple drugs, typically hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, some steroids, some antihistamines, aspirin. They're doing the same thing in India and elsewhere in the world. So someone can do that. A popular service that does that is called myfreedoctor.com, myfreedoctor.com. And they can help with a treatment kit, but more importantly, there's some prophylaxis that can be done. What I mean, prophylaxis, if you get COVID-19, it can cut down on the severity. So this is what you can do. One can do dilute povidone iodine, which is betadine. You can buy this for $1 a bottle on Amazon, and put just a few drops in a juice glass, mix it with water, swish and spit it out twice a day, and then take some Q-tips and swab the inside of your nose twice a day. And there's been studies, randomized trials and other studies showing that cuts down on the virus in the nose and mouth. When you breathe in COVID, it sits in your nose and mouth for a few days before it really fires up. And that works. In fact, dentists have been doing that all year long. It's called anti-infective dentistry. Some other things that work that are a little less effective would be dilute sodium hydrogen peroxide. One can use sodium hypochlorite. And then an easy one, if that's too difficult to do, is just use regular yellow Listerine, original yellow Listerine, brush, swish, and spit twice a day. But anti-infective dentistry cuts down on the chances of having a significant COVID infection by about 50%. So it's about as good as the Pfizer vaccine. Now, one can additionally take a medication. And the two approved approaches are hydroxychloroquine, 200 milligrams twice a day, one day a week, or ivermectin. Ivermectin has been recently guidelines updated by the Frontline Critical Care Consortium, FLCC. They now advise roughly ivermectin, roughly 18 milligrams twice a week for prophylaxis. Now you put anti-infective dentistry and a medical prophylaxis program in place. Now you have prevention that does rival even some of the good vaccines like Moderna or Johnson & Johnson. So you know, there clearly are things that can do. People are interested. People are taking action into their own hands. They're sick and tired of being said that there's nothing that can be done. They're sick and tired of saying, listen, just rely on the vaccine. As the vaccines are failing, the CDC had 10,000 vaccine failure cases, well documented. That's not everything. That's just what they had reported to them from local agencies as of May 1st. 9% were hospitalized, 3% died. Now, fast forward, July 26th on the CDC website, again, not the universe of patients, but what they had well characterized, they had 6,000 hospitalized patients, 19% died. So the vaccines that we're using in the United States clearly don't stop the infection in everyone, and they don't stop fatal or severe disease at all. In fact, 19% mortality is sky high, it's shockingly high. So I wouldn't rely on the vaccine to prevent severe disease. If someone has taken the vaccine, most of your listenership of these financial executives and others have all taken the vaccine, they should understand that they may have some benefit, but right now they could easily get COVID-19 like so many others, and they should seek early treatment.
Why, given the mishaps that we've seen with the vaccine, the number of people that are dying, the number of people that are developing heart issues we hear about from coaches, these young college kids that are getting it are having heart issues. We're seeing that in Israel. Why are they so adamant about, they're almost getting more strident and militant about, I mean, take a look at what is going on in New York City or in Los Angeles. It seems like they've become more strident in insisting on pushing this.
I think there's a mentality that once someone's taken the vaccine and they've gotten through the risks of it themselves, I think they lose compassion and they say, listen, I went through it and you take the vaccine too. And then when the person says, wait a minute, I'm worried about heart inflammation, they say, tough luck, just take it anyway. And, you know, if you take a hit with your heart or your diet, you know, that's your own problem. And so I think there is a real lack of compassion for people being injured with these vaccines. Once somebody takes the vaccine, they almost, their hearts become hardened. They seem to lose compassion, and they don't seem to be thinking straight, quite frankly. The vaccines don't work good enough to enforce this. In fact, a recent paper by Chow and colleagues from a unit of Oxford in Ho Chi Minh City was a real shocker. It was published in Lancet. They had a lockdown of hospitals. They kept the hospital workers locked down. They were testing them. They saw a blossoming of cases, 69 cases blossomed during lockdown. It was all Delta. They sequenced them all in these healthcare workers. And you know what? Healthcare workers had, who got Delta, fully vaccinated. They were about 2 months after all receiving the AstraZeneca vaccine. They had 251 times the viral load compared to someone in the pre-vaccination era. So these vaccinated people are becoming super spreaders. They are loaded with virus. And so you can imagine how these vaccine passports are going to work out. All these vaccinated people are going to be blasting each other with the virus. We clearly see evidence of the vaccinated infecting the unvaccinated, particularly the vaccinated adults infecting the unvaccinated kids. That's kind of what's fueling the Delta outbreak right now. So the vaccine program is crumbling, it's backfiring. And at this point in time, it either should be shut down or it should just be restricted to an occasional, let's say a nursing home worker who, you know, who wants to take the vaccine. But because so many Americans have died with the vaccine and so many have been injured, it can only be optional. They have to have fully informed consent. I don't want to see another American die or be injured with the vaccine and have to explain that to family members. It's awful.
Final question, if I may. Doctor, why do you do this? I mean, doctors like you, Simone Gold, doctors on the front line, we live in this cancel culture where big government, big tech, big media come after you. I mean, doesn't that weigh on you at times?
You know, when I got my medical degree, I swore an oath. It's called the Hippocratic Oath. And that was, I was going to try to always care for patients and their families. I was going to try to help them whenever I could. I knew that I would cure them rarely, but that oath is unbreakable. And there's no government issued mandate. There's no, you know, social media censorship directive that can break the fiduciary relationship between a high quality, high integrity doctor and his patient, or a high quality, high integrity family leader and their family, or a high integrity, high quality religious leader or business leader. We're all the same. So the business leaders that are listening to this, you have a relationship to your workforce. You got a fiduciary relationship to your workforce. And if these vaccines aren't working and they're not safe and they're not, one cannot mandate these. These are not something that are even in anywhere close to being mandated. They have to drop them immediately. The single most important executive function right now is drop these mandates.
Doctor, one more time as we close, if you had to just put out three websites that would be essential to our listeners who want to do research, could you run by those one more time as we close?
I would say truthforhealthfoundation.org, the Frontline Critical Care Consortium, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, AAPS, and I'll give you one more. American Frontline Doctors, AFLDS. These organizations are far more impactful than the American Medical Association, the CDC, the FDA, all these other sites. Remember, all the other sites are offering no treatment. They're offering no prevention. They're offering nothing for individuals. So Americans want something. Americans want some relief. They want some protection. They want some safety. And that's the reason why they're flocking to these sites, and they're flocking to podcasts like yours.
Well, thank you so much, Doctor. We really appreciate that there are doctors like you out there that uphold the Hippocratic Oath. I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program and wish you much success with this.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.